Welcome to the Learning Reinvented podcast, brought to you by myself, James Politilo, and the team at The Learning Effect. There are lots of learning podcasts out there, so we wanted to do something slightly different. In this episode, we'll be speaking to someone who's chosen to change their career, and as part of that, they're using the apprenticeship framework. I'm delighted to welcome Anya Horchick to the podcast. Anya, do you want to introduce yourself to our listeners and tell them a little bit about yourself?
Hi James, thank you for having me here. So I'm Anya Horchick, I work in architecture and I'm taking my Part 3 course at the moment.
So Anya, I'm sure our listeners will have picked up that maybe from your accent you weren't born in the UK. So where are you from and what led you to come to the UK?
That's a very good question. So I'm coming from Poland, and why UK? I think it was the fact that I was looking for new opportunities and definitely new challenges. Coming from a small town in Poland, the opportunities were not as wide as here. So I think, and also I was quite young, so I thought I would challenge myself coming here and just see what I can do and just explore the other part of the world.
What were you doing in Poland? What education had you done? What qualifications had you done before you came here?
So before coming here, I work in accountancy, which is totally, completely different world to architecture. And I think it's, when I think about it now, I think that's why I left my country. I just wanted to try something else. And also, it's the fact I wasn't very happy doing what I was doing. I always loved architecture, the creative job. I had passion for photography. So I think that's why.
And when you came to the UK for the first time, how was that experience for you?
Oh, wow. We could talk for hours, be honest with you, but we don't really have that much time. In a very short context, I would say it was extremely difficult. When I think about it now, I was pretty mad coming to this country, not knowing the language at all, and decided to stay. So I did took a little course, English course, which was for 2 weeks, then I extended for another 2 weeks, and then I realized I totally ran out of the money and decided, how about if I earn a little bit more money, then I can continue the course. And from a few months, I created 3 years, and I'm at my Part 3 of architecture now.
So you came to this country, you didn't really speak the language, you'd come here for and done a couple of weeks course, and then realised, you know, as it is in London, it's not the cheapest place in the world to live, and you're then having to earn money to pay for the next part of your course. So from that beginning, how did you progress to studying architecture in the UK?
So James, it's quite a long story. Before architecture, I actually did few smaller, shorter courses. But before that, I had to earn some money and also save some money. So it took me a good few years to save money and do what I wanted to do. So was interested very much in interior design. Started at evening course, which took me a year. Then I was more hunger to know a little bit more about the course, so I decided to take a 2 days course during a week. But it was very challenging because at the same time I was working full time and doing the course, so I was not sure if I should continue, but I was so interested and I've learned so much over those courses, I wanted more and decided I want to go to university and continue and just see where this one will take me. I know it sounds smart because in my 30th, people don't really think maybe much about going to university, but I thought I don't have anything to lose. I was working full time and I wanted something new, meet new challenges.
So you then went to university. So how was that university experience for you?
It was great. I have to say the interior design course was absolutely a dream. It was amazing. But I stayed there only for a year. And I tell you what was the reason. It's a funny story. I thought interior design is my dream. And I wanted a job in interior design. But having different projects at university, it brought my horizon much more wider. And I've realized that wasn't actually enough for me. I wanted different challenges and realized I wanted to do architecture because it was on my final project at interior design where they asked us to build a house in the middle of the bridge on a lake. And somehow at the end of this course, I end up applying for architecture.
And so you've started in interior design, you've realized maybe that was possibly your passion, but along the way you've been drawn to architecture. And how was that architecture course once you switched from interior design to architecture?
Totally different experience, I have to say. Is coming from a very happy place. Interior design was incredible experience. I had full of energy, was working full time at the same time, and I didn't really see any really big challenges on this course. But when I switched to architecture, my life totally switched, I would say 180 degrees. Life was so different, was so stressful, so difficult, just meet all those challenges. And I have to be honest here, architecture is pretty a lonely place to be. I've realized I didn't really have many friends like studying interior design. I wasn't going out as much. I have to concentrate on study 100%. And full-time job so I could pay my bills. It was very stressful. And don't forget, architecture is very long study. It's not only 3 years study. It's compared to doctors and law, you study 7 years. Depends which way you choose. You can study full-time or part-time. But it really scared me to death. If I actually want to continue this study, it was really, really, really difficult. So I finished my part one and it was 3 years of full-time course, but I was still working at the same time. And unfortunately, I decided to take a break, a long break, because I wasn't a happy person at all.
So you weren't a happy person, but you'd done this course, it was stressful, it was challenging. So, you know, was not being happy the only reason you took that break, or what else led to you taking that break?
It was just very difficult. It was challenging. And I think I was very disappointed at the same time that a job which I wanted to do and the passion what I've got for wasn't exactly what I was expecting, that I didn't find people very friendly, the whole culture was very different, cold, people were not sharing anything, any ideas, people were hiding their ideas behind the sketchbooks. It was very, very different how I imagined.
So it sounds quite competitive.
Oh, very much.
And so you then decided to take a break. What did you do with that break?
Oh, I think it was the best time in my life. I decided to do what I always wanted to do and went for long travel. But before that, I took a different route. I work in totally different field, which gave me opportunity to save money. I did lots of different little courses. We're talking about diving, traveling. I was the most happy person ever. I can tell I was back on track. So it was a rewarding time, I would say, after studying architecture for 3 years. Yeah.
So you're there, you've studied architecture, you're maybe not in that happy place, and then you've said you've gone away and been the most happy in your life. So in that period of time, so what led you to come back to architecture?
It's crazy. It's all about a passion, I would say, because it's in my heart. It's a passion for architecture, being creative. I think also because I took the break, is the my I think yes, it's the healing time also. I've realized maybe I should give another try and see, and also have different approach, being more mature with more experience. And funny enough, after my traveling and few years of working in a different fields, I decided to actually find a job in architecture. And I found the job so quickly. I was so surprised that actually my boss, I didn't have many interviews. I was accepted so quickly. And then I asked my boss, what was it? And he said, the main thing, it was the positivity, the way I spoke about architecture, how I see architecture, how I talk. It was so positive that he didn't think twice and he thought I would be the best fit in his firm.
Sonia, you're working back in architecture. What led you to undertake an apprenticeship?
James, before we talk about apprentice, I think I should explain a little bit more clear how everything works in architecture, just so people understand. So, as I mentioned, I've done my part one. Part one is more about undergraduate. The architecture is divided into three steps: the part one, part two, part three. Part one is undergraduate, which I've done, and I decided to take a longer break. I would never think I would go back to architecture, but then I did. I took my experience and knowledge with me. I started part two with apprentice. Apprentice came along because it was the very first year of running the course. I was lucky enough to be accepted. It wasn't many of us at the beginning and at the first year, but yes, I'm very grateful I managed to be accepted on this course, and that's where I am now.
So, just to check my understanding, so you were part of this first wave of new apprenticeships that came along with the apprentice levy because the government was trying to encourage in work study, you know, people in exactly the situation you are to return to study and be able to progress and better themselves. So you were almost a guinea pig at the start of that process because it was the first time that architecture had been done through an apprenticeship route rather than a more traditional education route.
It's so well said to call me a guinea pig, and my friends too. So yes, absolutely right. So the part two came in life is like a master's part two, by the way. And I have to say, we were a guinea pig, and I think we still are, because I think that the whole scheme, the idea of apprenticeship in architecture is so different to compare with other courses, they were testing water on us. They really didn't know what to expect. And it was very challenging. I have to say, working full time and be at university once a week, have the experience and the expectations which you have to deliver. It was beyond our expectations, I can tell. But also, how disappointed was it for us in terms of learning? So how I could explain the apprenticeship for others? You definitely need to be very good at time management. And maybe I was also naive a little bit with the course because I was thinking more how was my part one, which you can't really compare at all. The expectations were beyond anything what you can imagine. The organization, the management, and the fact you were giving totally different projects to deliver. Somehow you think it's apprentice, so you work at work, and of course you use the knowledge as much as you can, but we have to deliver totally different projects on a different level. So just to manage everything, it was absolutely challenging.
And I think it's a really interesting point, because the apprentice levy itself and the way it's meant to work is a really great idea, but sometimes these things fail a little bit in execution. So the apprentice levy is designed to create a new set of standards of qualifications, which are allowing people to work full time, plus do their apprenticeship alongside their work. But you should be able to align that really closely to the work that you are doing. And I taught from experience, because when the apprentice levy came out, I was working in hospitality and was trying to make sure that we were using the apprentice levy to train up our chefs and trying to get that qualification to align to the work the chefs were doing in their everyday work, so that we weren't pulling them out of kitchens or creating added workload on top of what they were doing that was unreasonable. But I know from speaking to lots of people across, you know, different industries and different professions, as you said, sometimes there wasn't that alignment between the work you were doing at work and the work you were doing in study or at university or whatever route you were doing your apprenticeship in. And therefore, it was, rather than making it easier, almost doubling the workload.
That's exactly what happened. And I was really surprised. Like I said, I was a little bit naive taking the course. I was very excited and motivated, and I thought exactly the apprentice I imagined will be totally different. But the reality was the opposite. It was draining. It was really challenging and very, very hard work. A lot of nights spent on study, deliver projects. Literally, we were in line with full-time students. And on the top of it, you have to deliver a lot of admin work, which nobody talks about it. We have to log our hours, what we've done at university. We have to log also our time, what we've done at work, our experience. And then we have to include the evidence. So at the end of the part two, you literally deliver a book of your evidence and work what you've done at work and also at university. Absolutely madness, I can tell. And yes, it's a very, very challenging and difficult course.
So if you were to give advice to anyone who was considering taking a similar route to you and progressing their career with an apprenticeship, what advice would you give them?
Maybe, James, what's very important to mention is the fact I took the route because I couldn't afford to do part two financially. So I was very happy I was accepted at the course because I could actually follow my dream and I could finish the course. Otherwise, I wouldn't be able to pay for the university. At the same time, I got pregnant during the course and I had a baby. I had to take maternity for a year. And I didn't know if I would actually continue because I was really scared. The course is a really tough cookie. It's really, really challenging. You have to meet lots of challenges. They treat you like proper full-time student. So don't think they will treat you differently because you're apprentice. Not at all. You have to still deliver at work your 100%. You meet your clients, you deal with issue on site, you meet contractor at university. They want exactly same standards. They won't give you any easy way. So I would say, if you're passionate, follow your dreams, go and try and push your boundaries, because I feel like my years being always a little bit above the ground, it feels like I was always pushing myself to do a little bit more and a little bit more. I started with the language course and then interior design course and then architecture, and I keep pushing myself every day to do a little bit more, which I'm really grateful for this one. And whoever wants to do the course, try, but remember, it's not easy. You have to be very organized, and time management is definitely a key part here.
I think it's interesting to hear you talking so passionately and in such a determined fashion about completing that qualification, especially considering the experience you had on your first architecture qualification. So have you seen any difference in how that's felt to you? Because clearly that was quite a traumatic experience the first time around. So how has this been different for you?
Architecture is a really funny place. And like I've mentioned before, it's a very lonely place. So my experience with part one was very lonely. And I never wanted to continue architecture. I never wanted to talk about architecture, meet the same people from my first 3 years in architecture, which is the undergraduate, where now with my master's and doing my professional part three course, I'm very different. And I don't know if this one comes with my experience, which I already got, or people who I met. It feels like the culture also changed. It's more friendly. I've got lots of great friends. It's very different. I'm much more passionate, and I'm also a person who loves people. So if I go to site, I want to deal with the issue with my contractor. I want to please my client, because at the end of the day, that's the customer service which you deliver. And I want to deliver very well. So I'm really happy I actually pushed my boundaries. I go back to this course, to this very, very different culture, because I'm beyond happy now. I actually push back, and I thought, I don't want to give up. I just want to do it again and see if this one is actually that difficult. Maybe I can make it some changes. And it could be also me. Maybe it's me approach it differently. I thought, no, I want to make architecture a happy place. I want to deliver the way I want to deliver. It's not the way I experienced on my undergraduate, where it was very dull and unhappy. Now it's a totally opposite place, 180%. And I can't wait to be a professional qualified architect and deliver projects and talk about it to anybody.
So we talked a little bit about you being a guinea pig, and you've given some advice to anyone who might be wanting to follow in your footsteps. But if you could give some advice to the organisations that are running apprenticeships or the employers that are supporting their own apprentices to go on an apprenticeship, or even the universities and other people providing the courses, what advice would you give to them to make the experience better?
Be honest with you, we did in the last 2 years in this apprenticeship scheme running. We were very honest with our tutors and directors because they need our feedback. We are the customers at the end of the day, and university, we are the client basically. So it's very important you talk about it very openly and be honest, talk about it, ask for any help. If you need the help, you definitely be open and talk about it. Don't just think it's a university and you're grateful, you're at the apprenticeship scheme, because they need your help, they need your feedback to improve the course. By our feedback, we know for the fact next year apprenticeship course at my university will be very different, because they know where the gaps were and how they can improve it, and they really appreciate our honest opinion. So whoever wants to do the apprenticeship scheme in architecture, go and try. Definitely go and try, and if something is not working, make sure you talk about it, because at the end of the day, you are the customer. You pay, the government pay university for the service. So they need to improve the service every day. And I think with every business, it's exactly the same, if that's apprenticeship or not. People need the feedback to improve and just get better.
And I think a lot of employers are quite put off by the apprenticeship. There's a lot of rules you've touched upon. There's a lot of admin. They need to support, they need to mentor, they need to release someone for a day a week to study or go to university or do whatever they need to. So what do you think are the benefits of an employer supporting that apprentice route?
That's a really good question. When I think about it, I was very lucky that actually my company accepted the fact I wanted to do apprenticeship, and also they allowed me to do it, because like you said, you need one day a week off from work. And don't forget, when you work full time in architecture, you still got your project to deliver, you've got your clients, you have to meet the expectations for client, you've got project on sites. So it's really hard, but I would say for work, it's a huge benefit, because I've learned so much. I've learned so much over the last few years. And I brought a lot of new knowledge to my company. I was passionate to talk about lots of different aspects. Now we're meeting new challenges in terms of sustainability, new energy types, and I went through everything with so many details at university, but also I have to study myself to understand a lot. So that's a huge benefit for my company, knowing that they've got a person who've got the knowledge and I can share with my colleagues at work. So it's a huge benefit to have apprentices in a company.
And I think it's interesting to consider. So, you know, the whole ethos and point behind the apprentice levy was to encourage organisations to invest in that professional development of their teams. And if you look back to maybe the more traditional route of architecture, you would have had to leave your practice, go and study part two full time and leave that company and not be working at the same time, not be able to gain your professional experience at the same time, as you've said, not be able to share your knowledge back into the practice. Meanwhile, that's practice is having to train someone else up, they haven't got them there, etc. So they're having to upskill, get someone to that right place. And then ultimately, you may not return to that company because you may go somewhere else when you then go into practice. So, you know, there seems to be quite a lot of benefits for them of almost retaining you, getting you up to a higher level, and the cost implications. It's either come from, for bigger companies, from the apprentice levy that's been taken from them anyway, and they can, that's the only way they can claim that money back. Or for smaller businesses, they're paying 10% rather than 90, you know, 100% of that qualification. So there do seem to be lots of benefits, but I still know lots of organisations out there are quite reluctant to take on that as a route to develop their staff. So Anya, thank you very much for sharing your story. I think it's a great illustration to show, you know, the adversity people work through to follow their passion, and also sort of a bit of a spotlight on what it's like to go through those first years of their new apprenticeship programs. But in terms of your story, what comes next for you?
What comes next? The first thing comes to my mind is to be qualified architect. I literally cannot wait after such a long study, such a difficult study, 7 years of study, and in between having long break, being disappointment, and then be very happy, and then being pregnant, and now having a toddler, is just meeting all those expectations. I'm beyond happy I'm here where I am now. And I think it's the fact having the responsibilities, being qualified architect, it would be a dream. Meet my contractor and another contractor and client and just deliver great projects. It's nothing better than that. And I think just support also my colleagues. I'm quite a positive person, even though maybe I sound, oh, it was difficult, and the language courses and study and architecture, and probably I was a little bit even depressed after the part one, the undergraduate. But in general, I'm actually a really positive and happy person. So I'm hoping I can share my knowledge with my colleagues and also with any apprentice, whoever wants to do the way, just to help and share. Is, yes, I just can't wait. And I think also the fact I can sleep through the night would be a dream. So I know, because that's the part of the whole course, is when you follow your dreams, you've got the energy and the passion and you forget how hard it is. So I think just to have a normal life, just to have a full-time job, it would be a dream, literally. Just to have a full-time job and enjoy my life is the cherry on the cake. And like I said, just share my knowledge with others would be amazing.
So thank you very much for joining us today. And if anyone wants to follow your story, get in touch with you, connect with you, understand more about where you go next, what's the best way of them doing that?
Whoever wants to contact me, you're more than welcome. I'm on the LinkedIn and you can find me by my name, Anya Horczyk. I'm also on the Instagram, but Instagram, I would say, is more my hobby, my passion for diving, architecture, photography and cooking. But you're more than welcome. Contact me there too. And I'm very happy. Get in touch if you want to talk about anything in terms of the apprenticeship and architecture, and I'm happy to have a cup of coffee and we can have a great chat.
Brilliant. Thank you, Anya, for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me here, James.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Learning Reinvented podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you've not already done so, please follow our podcast. And if the Learning Effect can help you and your organisation, please do get in touch. You can find both James and Katie on LinkedIn, and our contact details are in the show notes below.